my experience with death and dying has been, I would say, different than what I've been hearing everyone say. Jose and I were just briefly talking about it a little bit earlier, and his point was, I feel exactly like what he was saying, that with our upbringing, it was maybe creating a fearful situation. Mm-hmm. So you block it out. You block it out. Mm-hmm. I've never had the experience of being with anyone in my lifetime who died in my presence. Mm-hmm. So had that happened, maybe it would have been a slightly different experience for me. Mm-hmm. But when family members have passed away, my parents and Jan's family members and relatives that I've had, it's always been at a distance, you know, and you call and you talk to the family members and you go to the funeral and the wake and mm-hmm. all the other process that goes on. And this experience, this exposure here, I felt very queasy about, mm-hmm. first of all, doing it, but, you know, I said, yes, let's do it. And I was doing a lot of it for Jan and what she went through with her family, but I knew that I needed it as well. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate the stories and the experiences you've had and how you interfaced or worked with the people that were passing on. Mm-hmm. I think that's a real learning experience for me to mm-hmm. go through that with you all, and I appreciate that.
What's the origin of your upbringing that would make you so fearful?
Well, I've been raised Catholic for religion uh-huh. purposes, Italian for background, and Chicago for birthplace.
Well, that's a lot of strikes against you.
Polish.
Polish on my mother's side.
Chicago.
So, Chicago, too. Uh-huh. And I've been to a number of wakes and all-day affairs and bodies stretched out for months, it seemed like. from little on. Uh-huh.
Right.
What was your experience of the wakes?
Well, not pleasant. Mm-hmm. You know, people crying and unhappy and had somebody talked about reincarnation or another mm-hmm. another mm-hmm. place that other than heaven or mm-hmm. purgatory, whatever they would tell us, you know, it may have made more of a pleasant impact on me, mm-hmm. but I would come away from it and stay away from it if mm-hmm. possible. Mm-hmm. And fear going, you know, a family member would pass away in Chicago and, you know, my hands would be moist the whole time.
It was also an all-day event.
Yeah, all-day events.
By 10 o'clock in the morning, we would take dinner breaks and lunch breaks.
It's at the funeral parlor.
Yeah.
Talking about this.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the next day would be the funeral.
They do it. That's the way they do it in Chicago.
Uh-huh. The Polish-Italian.
The Polish-Italian.
Did, so what happened here that's different?
What happens here is different.
Yeah. I mean, what happened in the
everything's court? Different. I mean, it's the premise is different, and, uh-huh. and it's just so more fulfilling to understand reincarnation, to understand that our spirit has a future, uh-huh. okay, uh-huh. And uh-huh. you're not going to be stashed in some corner of uh-huh. heaven uh-huh. or wherever you're going. Really, yeah. And the astral life, I mean, I've learned all about this in the last year and a half
yeah.
here. Mm-hmm. And I'm just ready to die. No fears at all. I'm looking forward to it, so to speak.
Yeah, that's very, very good. What about you, Jose, when you were
yes.
talking to each other?
Yeah, uh-huh. So I'm in agreement with the upbringing, because that's where I develop all this fear. Because when somebody passed away, there was so much pain and suffering to everyone in the family. And you will see all these people crying. Like I said before, it's like 10 days of complete, you know, living the experience again and again and again mm-hmm. for 10 days. And then people will dress in black mm-hmm. for 9 months or something like that, or a year, okay? Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, this is the end. You know, nobody even wanted to talk about it. It was a topic that you don't want to mention this, you know, anywhere. So then with the education and the wisdom that I'm gathering in this class and other curriculums in the Ananda structure, I now know what self-realization really means, because I have a body and I'm not the body. I have a mind, I'm not the mind, right? I have emotions and I'm not my emotions. So I have this beautiful soul that is going to transform. It's a transition. It's not the end of something. It's the beginning of this evolution that we're going through. Okay? And knowing that, then I also feel grateful for all the things that I got from my father and my mother that already passed away.
Yeah.
So it's another existence that comes up, you know, into another level of beings. So that's what I really like. As a result, the fear of death is not there. Now I can just face it, and you know, nothing happens, like you said in class. Okay.
Yeah, very good. For those of you who came late, we have two agendas, and we're going to probably just run it from now till 9 o'clock with our usual dinner break, which is that we want everybody to speak about what this experience has been for them. Gathering with your friends for 7 weeks in a row and talking about death and dying. And also, if there's any unfinished business, I mean, questions, yes, or just issues that you're not quite clear on that we need to straighten out. And we're just going to go all evening like this.
Also, it was powerful to listen and share the stories of other people that passed away in the forum that we had with all these trusting partners around us, okay? Great souls around us. Listening to the story of other people passing away also makes me feel compassion and understanding and get more centered instead of overreacting like it was in the past.
Yeah.
So it's a new recontextualizing what I was trained up before to a new level of understanding. And I feel really good. It's very empowering.
You know, the Spanish-speaking culture has so much heart, but if that heart is uncentered, it goes into a lot of emotion.
Yes.
But when that culture becomes centered, it goes into a lot of devotion and a lot of intuitive feeling for things. Mm-hmm. So it's very nice that we have so many Spanish-speaking first language
people who
have lived through all of that, but now can take all that feeling about things and elevate it.
It's
a really nice
exactly. And another key message I got talking to my sister on the phone about this topic about death and cremation, because she already bought the spot for cremation, and she was happy when I explained to her that you know it's better the cremation so the spirit can disconnect faster, and she said, oh yes, I like that Okay, so I told her, she said, oh, I want to take that class. I said, yeah, come over for a few weeks to California, and then you can attend. So perhaps I can get her the recording or do something, because she was very enthusiastic when she heard about the topic, where in the past she was also like me, fear about talking about this topic.
I can't tell you how that warms my heart.
It's all online.
Because
I've been listening.
She can go onto the internet and just pull it up.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay.
We'll make sure you know how
to do it. Good.
And 12 months from now, we'll do it again.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Did you ever see the film Like Water for Chocolate?
Yes.
And so in that film, you know, she has the ashes of her mother. Do you remember that part? And so as long as she keeps that with her, she's trapped in that kind of a history and in that kind of a pattern. And so when she finally throws the ashes out into the wind, she's freed. It's very interesting. You know, when my father passed on, he had this this fantasy about lost horizons. And so what we did is, I happened to have some pilots in my family, we took up these small planes, and we flew over the Rocky Mountains and threw his ashes out over the mountains. And you could just feel that his spirit could fly free then.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful image.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's nice.
You know, in the Indian tradition, they don't store the ashes, they disperse them into the river. Mm-hmm. And, in many ways, that's even better still. Mm-hmm. Because not only is the body gone, there is just no place, there's no place in physical space where the body and the incarnation is focused. So dispersing into the sea or dispersing into the rivers is even better still.
Yeah.
And, all that is very deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Amy? Well, I think that this class has been very valuable.
You'll have to try to get your voice a little bit
correct. I think this class has been really wonderful in kind of, like people have said, preparing for another vision as to how death can be and coming to some peace with it. I guess when you speak about unfinished business, what I'm still struggling with is, like, the deaths that I've been witness to in my life have all been young and all been shocking, sudden deaths, like 8 funerals of people under 30 and things like this, you know? And so because I was younger, I feel like there's some kind of schism in me that doesn't quite know how to really integrate that or bring it up to date or process it in some way. And I'm wondering if you can speak to how do you finish when grief has kind of touched you so deeply that you've been, like, almost severely changed by that experience. I don't know if I'm explaining right.
You're explaining it too vividly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I've been finished.
Sorry.
I get it.
Do you have a thought? Well, it really is a very different situation, those premature deaths that you're talking about, because it is an incomprehensible loss. For the people who are left behind. And I don't think that there's really any way to understand it except in the context that we've been speaking about, in the context of reincarnation, in the context of people following given paths in their lives and understanding that, you know, a death on this plane is a birth on the astral plane, but it doesn't take the feeling.
Yeah.
It doesn't transform the
feeling.
Well,
that's my problem, is that I can mentally understand concept, but the feeling is still kind of, you know, hitting something. Yeah.
What you're talking about is karma.
Okay.
It's karma. It's the karmic impression, because it was their karma to die, but it was your karma to have it happen to you also.
Mm-hmm.
And so that experience has left vrittis in your chakras that are, the nucleus of it is whatever the nucleus is. Life is unreliable, people will let me down, I can't depend on anything, I better not love, life is so painful.
All of those?
Yeah.
All of the above.
I live in a state of fear, I better not commit to anything, you never know what's going to happen. Yeah. But understand that after the physical event is over, it disperses into infinity. There's no physical event anymore. There is, within your chakra, a seed point of comprehension of reality at a certain level. And then all of the subsequent responses, reactions, and decisions that you make based on that seed point. I better not commit. So, you know, I'm going to only date men who won't commit to me because I'm going to check. Right. You know, I'm not going to be ambitious because what difference does it make? I mean, I'm not going to make a home. I'm just going to camp in my apartment. Whatever it is that we do. Mm. And then you make a whole circle around it. But what caused that is gone and is no longer a reality at all. But your reaction to it has become who you are.
That makes so much sense.
Right.
Thank you.
So the way for you to deal with this is that you need, and this, now, please understand, people are always telling me, oh, I just want to finish this karma. Well, honey, not likely. We can progress it. But that kind of deep loss, you live with it. But you try to understand, and you understand slowly over many years, you know, what seed thought I'm holding. Mm-hmm. And then as you watch yourself make other decisions around that seed thought, you try to chew around the edges of it. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to deal with the grief of all those young losses, but you can deal with the continuous building of a bigger and bigger vritti by allowing that habit, what has now become an emotional habit, to rule you without your knowing it. Connie has something to add.
I do, because that still doesn't get you out of the situation.
Well, it does in a way, because that's why we do Kriya, and that's why we do all these purifications.
Exactly.
So it does provide a pathway out of it. And, you know, I've been living with the emotion, so I can deal with the emotion. Mm-hmm. I just want to get, you know, feel something else for a while. You know?
Well, I think within the...
I know what she's going to say. Go ahead.
I want to know. Within the realm of energy medicine.
Energy medicine. Yeah. That's a very good idea. It's an extremely good idea.
The highest form of energy medicine is Kriya, meditation, that sort of thing. But there are other helps along the way. Mm-hmm. And as we move into this age of energy, people are understanding that. And there are many techniques now to help people take those energetic patterns and shift them. And some of those techniques that you may have heard about are things like the emotional freedom technique, which is called tapping, which is very popular now, or the healing codes is another way. And all of these things are based on the premise that with an earlier emotional experience, there's an energetic pattern that's set up that preconditions your response in the future, that you're responding on the basis of what happened in the past to what's happening in the present. And that there are ways of switching those energy fields. Mm-hmm. And so more and more those kinds of techniques are being promulgated throughout the world of healing. And, you know, frankly, the energy medicines as well, the flower essences and the homeopathic essences, and all of those work on just what it is that you're saying. Mm-hmm. So they're not the ultimate healing. The ultimate healing would be through, you know, changing working with the vrittis and that sort of thing, but they help you get in or find a way that you can actually do that a little better.
And I've actually, with Connie's help and others, I've used those flower essences and homeopathy for non-physical issues, for mental patterns that I couldn't break, and I've had great success with them. I can't say that I've used them many, many times, but on several specific occasions, I was able to break a mental pattern with energy medicine. Because Connie really is really, really immersed in it and really understands it. It's very true. It's kind of like, I'm going to take all the help I can get. You know? If I have a headache, I will take an aspirin. I don't just have to tough it out. I think Connie put it perfectly. Kriya is the highest form of energy medicine, but let's just support it with everything else we can.
Yeah. That makes so much sense. Thank you for that explanation.
I've also been extremely impressed with just how deep-seated these karmic experiences are and how patient we have to be as we work our way through them. And I've also been very impressed by the fact that we can become entirely new people and that nothing is fixed. We might have dug ourselves a fairly deep hole, and so the energy to get out of it, and especially if you set yourself up with a karmic condition where wham, 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 you know, it's like, this is the gospel according to Asha. I haven't really read this in other places. No, actually, that's not true. I recently talked to Swami Kriyananda about it. I said, whatever's wrong with you, you have to make it worse and worse and worse, don't you, before you really get sick enough of it to really turn it around. So very often, things happen, they're just really big. Because if they weren't that big, we just keep putting them under the rug. So if you have something like that, then you say, wow, this is the lifetime I finally get to really deal with this. I get to really wrestle with it because it's so big it's interrupting everything. Yeah. So it's good karma. Okay. Who wants to go next? Everybody's going to have to talk. It's really whether you want to do it on a full or an empty stomach.
Well, my experience with death, I've never been present to see someone pass. So I'll go way back to when I was a child, and I don't remember death being spoken of, but my first experience was she wasn't in our immediate neighborhood. This little girl had passed. She lived on another street that had a streetcar route, and she had been hit by a streetcar and dragged along. She was only about 5, and so the news got down the block, and so somebody said, why don't we go see? So no one knew we had gone. We go, a bunch of kids, and she's laid out in the front room, this beautiful little angel. I can still see that face in the white coffin. She was blonde. And not knowing what death was, it was like seeing a doll in that coffin, or this beautiful, beautiful doll. So I don't remember anymore who was there. It seemed like a very small room. And so then we made our way back home, and I don't ever remember even telling my mother that I'd done that that day. So I didn't understand it, really. You know, if someone is in your home, if someone is close and they die, then they're gone. Well, then there's something there to hang on to or figure out. But this wasn't like that. So now we fast forward to, because I really, to when we moved from Canada to LA. And we lost our son at 6 weeks old. And we hadn't forged any friendships yet. We hadn't been there that long. My sister-in-law was there, but they were working, and we really hadn't gotten any closeness. So here we were. I was 22. We had one child. So that was a big blessing. And I think about it now, and I think someone was really taking care of us. Because as time went on, of course, you mourn, and I could hear him crying all the time, you know, in my mind. But then we were blessed with four other children, and I love those children. I mean, I love children, so while I missed him and the possibility of him, I had these wonderful souls that came to us. And so it balanced it out, really. Never forgotten it, but I wasn't so attached to it that it ruined everything else. And so now, after that, of course, life brings you to many funerals and such. The next really close person was my mother. And she passed at 91. But I had been on a path, so that had a whole different slant. But the one thing, of course, we were far apart again. We lived here. My mom lived in Hamilton, which is near Toronto. So she passed. I was supposed to go and pick her up to come for Christmas. She had made the last trip alone here at age 90. So this time she had called, and she was kind of, so I said, well, why don't I come and get you? Well, I didn't have that opportunity because she passed before the time came. And so my sister and I went back, and there's karma involved. We talk about karma, but my mother's karma as well. When my son died, there was a lot of religious dissension in the family when her family grew up, and there was this thing against the Catholics. So she said to me, I don't know how long, maybe a year or so later, after our son died, she said, I had a dream about a day, two nights before, and I was told to say the rosary. And she said, I knew I had to listen to that. And so she had to go she had Catholic friends, so she went to her Catholic friends. You have a rosary. I need to say the rosary. How do I do it? And she did it.
Oh, it wasn't her natural.
No.
Oh, I see.
But she knew she had to get through this samskar, really, what it was. And it was, she had to do that. And so she did, and she got over this thing about the Catholic issue. So now, when she died, she always said to me, I don't want them cutting me up. I don't want to have an autopsy. So my being here delayed things. Of course, they didn't find her, that she had died for several hours or almost a day. And so they waited for me to come. So that brought it to almost 2 days. And they hadn't performed the autopsy. So she got her wish there. But my feeling when my mother passed, it was really strange. This thought went through my head. How come how come you died? I thought you were going to be here forever. It was just sort of a, you know. And then when we went to get the ashes to bring them here, because we had to have, I mean, we had family there, her brother and sisters, mm-hmm. so we had to have something. And then we have to come here and have our immediate family, mm-hmm. my sister and her grandchildren. So I get these ashes and I look. That's Mom and this little box. I mean, it's sort of just, I thought, it just didn't make sense. You know, but I was able to separate and realize that, you know, the soul had taken flight and this was just, and I asked myself, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, and I had to bring those home.
Yeah.
And she was on a path, so, you know, there was... She had taught me a lot, mm-hmm. and she belonged to the Rosicrucian Order, so we had a, mm-hmm. a ceremony there, a beautiful mm-hmm. ceremony, and they took the ashes and said they would bury them in the park, so mm-hmm. that was, I'm sure my mother was happy about that, mm-hmm. even if she had, whether or not she'd even thought about doing something like
yeah.
that.
Okay.
So, so now... I'm in a sort of a, my husband sort of doesn't like to talk about these things, so this has really energized me, and I'm meditating on how, oh, we can say a little bit, but then it stops. And, you know, the sheet that Lahiri gave us, you know, you get do the directives, or if that's your wish, and they've been sitting there for 7 years, and we have to get to that. So a lot of meditation on that, and how I'm going to sort of able to make progress
yeah.
with that is going to be very helpful. Yeah. And this has been very helpful, too, giving me the courage and the strength to work with that.
You know, one member of our community here mm-hmm. Has grown children, and none of her grown children are in sympathy with her religious beliefs.
Mm.
So she made me her medical wow. power of attorney, and she just told her children that the chances were greater that I would know. and you know, it wasn't hurtful, because
right.
they all know me too,
uh-huh.
but she really wanted the decision to be in my hands, not in the hands of her relatives, because she just didn't think that they would be coming from the same realities that she would want to come from if she was unable to deal with them. So you really sometimes have to think about these things, because you see very odd things happen. Because
yeah.
only family has authority unless you pass the authority on.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
family,
I think my mm-hmm. fortunately, our daughters, they have that.
Yeah.
It's innate. They've been exposed to a lot of mm-hmm. this, and they're not totally unfamiliar
yeah.
with the way I feel. And of course, their grandmother felt, you know.
Yeah.
So.
You can say it. Thinking of burying ashes in the park. One of the first people at Ananda Village, our first and only community at that time to die, was an elderly man. His death was, you know, very timely. He was the head gardener, and he took to his bed and 6 weeks later died. I mean, he was fully working, then he had cancer, but at a certain point he lay down and he never got up. And so there was a lot of talk at the end, and the natural thing is that we would spread his ashes in the garden. What else would we do? And for a long time he kept saying no, because if the crops fail, you will blame me. But then at the end he just sort of said whatever.
Yeah.
But I always remembered he had this very dignified way of speaking. Who else would like to speak?
I feel sorry for the other story on the soul that they dropped the ashes on the rugs, and they had to come with the vacuum
cleaner. Yeah.
Oh,
that was Reba. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And maybe the person was tired of just all the show. Nothing happens by accident.
Yes.
Somebody else to clean up after them.
Right? Yeah. Think someone else would like to speak?
I will.
Okay.
So,
pull your chair in a little closer.
I will.
Okay.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So I think what this class has done for me, it's helped me crystallize what I want for myself. And it's also helped me, I feel like I'm in a better place to help someone else when they're done. Because I've been in that position a couple of times, and I'm not necessarily pleased with how I responded. I think I could have done much better. One case, maybe not, because it was a difficult person, you know. And, and I did get her out of the hands of the medical profession so that she was just allowed to die. So, but in the other case, I think I could have done a lot better. And so I think now it's helped me so that I will be able to do better in the future. I guess, in a way, I feel lucky because my first association with death was I was raised very strongly Catholic, and I loved everything about it. Oh, my gosh. And I still love a lot about it. You know, there's no better music in the world. But it was a nun who died who I knew, and I was in the fourth grade, and she was in the fifth grade teacher, and I was the So I knew her, and she died, but the nuns kind of walked us through it all. And the teacher that I had at the time talked about how she had been her roommate in the convent. This was a semi-cloistered order of nuns. And so she talked about what they had done to prepare the body and all of that. And then they had all of us go over to see the body as it was lying in state in the convent.
Isn't that enlightening?
So you're there with all your classmates, too. Uh-huh. So it's just something everybody's doing. So it wasn't horrible or anything. It just kind of smelled. That's what I remember most of all. And there were so many flowers there. But it wasn't awful at all, so I didn't have a huge fear of all of that.
Well, all those nuns believe that when you die, you go to heaven to be with Jesus.
Absolutely, so it was a wonderful thing.
This is a good moment.
It was a glorious thing.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely it was.
They wouldn't be fearful at all. They would be rejoicing.
Right, so that was a nice introduction, I think, in a way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then my grandmother died, and oh my gosh. I mean, I thought it was supposed to be kind of a serious, solemn thing, and we go to the funeral home after she's already prepared. She died in a hospital of a heart attack, but she was only there about 5 days, so it wasn't a long, lingering thing. And she was like 86 years old, but an interesting woman. And so anyway, we get there, and I'm thinking it's very serious and all that. Well, my aunt, her daughter, says, I don't like her smile. She never smiled like that. You've got to change that smile. Where'd you get that hairdo? She never did. She's just going, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, she's dead. What? Why? I was kind of appalled at it. I was really appalled at it. And then we go to the funeral, and my sister, who is very skilled at making fun of anything serious, I mean, she can crack a joke and take you right out of it. Mm-hmm. And she did that as we're all walking in with the coffin. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, it was kind of interesting.
Well, why not? She's 86 years old, and she lived a good life. And I mean, if she was giving a party at her house, she wouldn't want everyone to come in and just sit there and look really glum.
No, that's true. That's true.
You can be respectful and be joyful at the same time. People think that in order to be respectful, you have to be sad.
Yes,
and that if you're not unhappy, you didn't really love them.
Yes,
you know, it's just completely very confused point of view. Mm-hmm. The fact is, all realities exist at the same time.
Yes.
Sri Ramakrishna, an avatar in the 1800s near Calcutta in India, he was a very extreme spiritual person. He had enormous experiences all the time. And one of his, someone who'd taken care of him for much of his life was his nephew. His name was Hridaya. And when Hridaya died, Ramakrishna went through just, you know, in the course of minutes, he was dancing in ecstasy and telling everyone about how Hridaya's spirit had risen like light and gone up into the infinite, and what joy that he was free. And then he would weep. But who will walk with me at the Ganges in the morning? Who will bring me my cup of tea? You know, who will understand like Hridaya understood? Then he would go into this ecstatic state. And it was so bizarre as it was described. But in fact, he was acting out all of it. He was just being a perfect example of the fact that it all happened simultaneously. And I think that's what we really want, is we just want to be completely sincere. About absolutely everything.
But what I've also gotten from this is that you need to be particularly careful of the medical profession, because if you allow yes. rather yeah. than to allow you to die. It really is torture what they do to you.
Here's what Daniel Brinkley said, who made a point of teaching about death and dying. I've heard this statistic elsewhere. The entire medical expense crisis is based on the fact that 70% of every dollar is spent in the last six months of life in order to prolong life an average of 21 days, which Daniel Brinkley declared will be the most miserable 21 days of your life.
Absolutely.
He called it life greed, which is at the point at which it's over, we become greedy.
But we have to protect ourselves from that so that we can die with dignity. Yeah. There's no dignity.
Mm-hmm. Well, the doctors, for the most part, with notable exceptions, and Shanti being another notable exception, they're just, when I had to go to that hospital and when the man turned off the machine that I told you, the medical people were just freaked. That's the only word I can use for it at the whole situation. I was perfectly relaxed, and the guy was really wonderfully relaxed, and his family was all in between, but he and I were fine. And then they insisted on giving him some kind of a mind-numbing sedative. Mm-hmm. And I tried to reason with the doctors because I wanted to help him die. He didn't need it. I said, he's perfectly fine, but I realized they couldn't stand it. They just couldn't stand it. So they drugged him and then turned off the machine. Oh, but it hardly mattered. He was minutes away from the astral world, but it was just...
Well, I took my aunt out of the hospital. I mean, I had actually forced her in there because the problem is nobody will take care of you if you're dying if you don't have a doctor who can say what's wrong with you or that you are dying. And she hadn't been to a doctor for over 60 years, so the caregiver was threatening to leave unless a doctor got involved because she was afraid she was going to get blamed legally for it. Mm-hmm. So I forced her into a hospital, and she just went from bad to worse in 11 days. She was at UCLA, and finally I told the doctor... I said, well, I'm taking her home. I want you to sign her over to hospice because it's obvious she's dying. You're not doing her any good here. She's gone from bad to worse. And he said, well, we're not used to letting people go like this. I said, what do you mean? None of us come out of this alive. And so I did get her home. He did sign it, and I was able to take her home. Mm-hmm. So, and she died just 2 weeks later, without... forced feeding or...
Without a lot of brouhaha. Mm-hmm.
I think in defense of the medical profession, there's so much confusion in our culture with regards to death and dying, and legally and politically and every other way. When my father was dying, I took him out of the hospital and took him home, and my father's doctor actually wrote me a letter of thanks, and he said... So few people are able to let somebody go when the time has come that we, as a medical profession, have our hands tied behind our back because people want us to keep their loved one alive. You know, so it's sort of the flip side of the coin. Mm-hmm. You know, if you talk about the death panels, when Obama talked about having a conversation at the end of life about what should we do, that was labeled death panel, and this is the kind of confusion. The death panel, which is crazy making, but it means that, just according to who you are and who your doctor is and what the situation is, there's going to be a lot of confusion. So you want to be very clear about what it is that you want.
And you have to stand up to them, too. Because I had given a do not resuscitate order for my aunt, and then the doctor went in and asked her before they were going to do a procedure, and she said, well, yeah, of course. And he said, well, now she says she wants to. And I said, well, what did you ask her? I asked her if she wanted to be resuscitated if she stopped breathing. And they said, well, of course she says yes, but that's the wrong question. The question really is if you stop breathing, do you want us to sound the alarm, bring this whole team in, rip open your gown, pound on your chest, break your ribs, jam a breathing tube down your throat for the rest of your life and have this thing breathe for you, and you'll never be able to eat again either, by the way. But all down if you want to be resuscitated.
I saw a piece of a documentary that was done by medical doctors trying to straighten out the chaos in the medical profession about death. And the doctor said, this is the conversation we have to have with all our patients. You're mortal. Get over it.
I just love that.
Friends.